Hello, and welcome to the Game Slave Podcast, episode 109. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And today, we've had some user feedback, and we're going to talk about it.
Yep. I'm just going to call her V, since that's what it was her sign-off on here. She has requested that we talk about Valve authorizing user-based content based on success with Skyrim and episodic gaming as an experience.
Well, the first one I don't think I could talk about because I haven't really noticed anything in Skyrim because I haven't played it yet.
Well, I think I discussed my, the start of Skyrim, I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. And I just kind of, stopped caring about it, I guess.
Whereas I can't use the user-based content because I got the Xbox version instead of the PC version. But I did look through it, see some of the stuff, and I looked at some of the other user-based creations for the two other games they allow them. Mainly Team Fortress 2 and Portal 2. So let's go ahead and we'll just start with, the little bit of stuff that we've done over the past week. Today was Mother's Day, so we didn't get our normal gaming marathon in today of Dungeons & Dragons.
No.
And given how it looks like, we're not going to get Dungeons & Dragons in for about another 2 weeks.
Yeah, we should be able to get it in. Basically, we should be, the next time we play D&D, we're going to be doing the 5th edition playtest.
Fun. So we're going to do temp characters?
Yep. I don't know exactly what's going to be all it. The details right now are basically, there's going to be a playtest that's going to be released on the 22nd. And so it's like, okay. So, are you just like, I'm assuming it's just going to be like a packet with like a little, a couple encounters and some different player characters to try out.
Could be fun.
I think my guess is as to what the content will be. So
Hummingbird has already requested the wizard.
Yeah.
Aww.
He's like, someone who can't have it. I am the wizard. I will duel him for the wizard.
He wants to be the cowardly wizard.
Okay. I'll take,
modeled slightly off of Prince John from Robin Hood Men in Tights. Hurt them! Hurt them!
Actually, this could be rather entertaining. I'll play whatever character is just going to insult him for being a wussy.
Paladin it is.
Yeah, a paladin would.
Or barbarian.
We'll see what they have, what our choices are when it actually arrives.
I just hope they give us enough characters. I hope they're not going to say, here's 4 characters and don't tell you how to make any more, because 4 is not going to cover the party.
No.
Well, don't you need 5 right now as it is?
5 is what they consider like the typical party for 4th edition. We don't know. They might change their design philosophy for 5th. They might say, no, we're going to go back to the 4, average 4-person party because we, find it's, from feedback with other, with our players, we found it's easier to get that group of people together or something.
Which I'll agree with that.
And potentially it is, but then, it's like, what they essentially need to do is kind of, put a survey out, what is your party size, basically, and then it's like, basically take the average and say, okay, this is what we're going to design to. And then, because then you can, it's easier to adjust like a little bit up and a little bit down than a whole lot in one direction. Like if you go to just, like whatever you think the minimum kind of party size is going to be. But I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be good.
Yeah, it sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be nice to see what little changes they make. And then we can go and look at the forums and see all the people complain about how they ruined it.
Oh, grognards.
See, every edition it's been ruined and it's like, well, for it being ruined, people are still playing. And
my only thing is about the new version is technically you don't even need to buy the books half the time. You pay the yearly subscription fee and there's everything you need.
I mean, that's my thought. That's a lot cheaper than buying the books and a lot more accessible.
Now, they just need official Wizards of the Coast apps for iPhone and Android.
Yes!
That way we're not dealing with, just whatever somebody else makes and, 30 different design protocols or something that doesn't work quite right.
I'd like a compendium app because trying to surf the compendium on a mobile phone is not ideal.
Sorry. There actually is one. It's not by Blizzard, but there actually is one.
Yeah.
I have it on my phone.
No, we can't afford a netbook yet.
Anywho, yeah, that's typically what we do on the weekends, and we usually record right before that happens. But Mother's Day also prevented that. Happy birthday to all you moms. Happy birthdays. Happy Mother's Day to all you moms. Thank you for raising us geeks.
Yes, mom.
And putting up with our obsessiveness and foibles of various sorts.
I would rather put up with mine.
I took my mom two Avengers for Mother's Day last week, so she doesn't quite put up with mine, as in she supports it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, my parents were playing video games before I was born, and kind of just said, here, play video games.
I seem to be the odd man out here.
Yep. Well, my dad isn't much of a geek. Does that help?
Yeah.
Your dad's a geek, but in a different way.
He's not a geek, he's a nerd.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is not a fan, like, there are very few things that he's really a fan of. He has, like, no hobbies. It's kind of weird.
Anywho.
We're digressing.
We are. So let's go ahead and go into the stuff that we were asked to talk about. Let's go ahead and start with user-generated content. Now, as many of you may know, Portal 2 recently had an update called the Continued Testing Initiative, I think is what it's called, where people are basically asked to create testing rooms. These testing blueprints are then sent to another dimension's Aperture. They build the room, and then our Aperture steals it from them. That's the reasoning for it being created, if you watched the preview for it. Basically, the excuse comes down to is it's the reason why all these players are able to create these rooms in the Portalverse, or in Aperture Labs, as it may be.
Also, they have an infinite amount of space, essentially, to work with.
Have you seen the size of Aperture Labs? Did you play through Portal 2?
No, I think I bought it and not actually played it yet.
The place is massive. I could see them having infinite rooms. Plus, GLaDOS seems to be able to rearrange rooms at will. Mm. And, like, take parts of them, put them away, and then bring other parts back.
I wonder if GLaDOS is just, you know, Aperture Labs herself.
She is now.
She's one giant living artificial intelligence.
That can be put into a potato.
Oh, yes. I forgot she gets a potato body. I haven't played either.
Oh,
I did see the time.
I saw the best portal cake on somewhere on the internet.
Geekology, where they had the portal cake flying through the portal?
Yes. And the kid had a portal gun in the background of the picture. It's like, it was amazing.
There's been some really good geeky cakes on Cake Rex on their Sunday sweets.
The portal gun that Geekology sold out in 10 minutes.
Were there multiple ones, or was there just one?
1,500.
Holy cow. Apparently, I'm in the wrong business. Apparently, instead of little things art-wise, I need to go into fabrication and make portal guns or My Little Pony plushies.
Okay, I would feel dirty making those.
But they sell.
Okay, I gotta tell this story because I saw it somewhere and it was just kind of... So last season... Well, this is Gigi. It's My Little Pony. But...
It is user-generated.
But what it
was. Let's not speak of user generated ponies.
Ugh. Okay, everyone stop. Stop mine's in the gutter. Okay. Back it up here. The reason why I was thinking is, as a craftsperson, I was just like, I wish I could do that because there's people who've been making plushes because apparently there really is not a good official plush line. So there's a lot of people who are in the craft business who've been making their own. Well, the last two episodes of the last season of My Little Pony had this particular character called Queen Chrysalis, which she's a changeling pony. She's kind of like a twisted evil version of the Flutter ponies from the old school My Little Pony. But somebody had built a particularly good plush. I mean, I could say it's at least a good foot and a half tall or something. And they started out like $50 to $100. Just, you know, cover their costs and make a little profit. This thing sold on eBay for over $2,000.
Impressive.
And most of them that are actually done really well, but the person actually knows what they're doing, constructs them really well, they go for several hundred dollars. And I'm like, man, I'm in the wrong part of the art world here.
Perhaps.
I need to make art plushies, or I guess I could just make My Little Pony fan art, but then I feel bad about making fan art for selling because it's not my own property. I have a thing against doing that. I don't mind making it for myself or to give to somebody, but for selling?
Well, the little thing called copyright law has a thing against that, too.
Yeah.
I actually asked about how that works. you don't name it the same thing that you're actually doing. You name it something descriptive instead. You don't call it My Little Pony. You call it
Small Equine Toy.
Exactly. You do something like that. You name it something similar, but not the actual copyright.
But if the image is copyrighted, the particular design is copyrighted. So.
I didn't say I agreed with it. I just said that's how the Etsy people get around it.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta talk about that. Well, I digress, so let's go back to the topic and I'll talk about that.
So, the
Roy G. Biv Sprinter.
The question that was asked us is basically, what do we feel about, you know, user-generated content? I'm all for it because it allows people to be a little more creative with the tool, with the tools that the developers have. You start seeing more creativity that the developers may just not have thought of. It also gives people that
sense of community, I guess.
A sense of community. You also find those people that normally wouldn't have the ability to get the attention of developers, and even though they'd like to be a game developer or, you know, a programmer, it's a way to get attention. Because then if, you know, they send in a little resume, things like, and you can look at my work on your game using your tools here. That way they have an example showing you they already know how to program use their gaming information. I think it's actually Bethesda has actually done that. They've hired people based off the mods that they've created.
Yeah, I just find it, I find that sort of, you know, it's like fan art that's allowed. It's like stuff you're like, okay, we're not going to do it, you're not going to make any profit, but you want to be able to do it and share it with other people. And we don't mind you doing that, because then it's a way that people can, you know, it can be controlled by the developer, and they're not really losing anything, and they're letting other people kind of explore and experiment with, you know, their world.
And it's an easy way to get extra content without them having to spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah, because everybody else is making content for you. And not necessarily, you know, further storyline or anything, but...
Apparently they did add an additional, like, 20 minutes of Cave Johnson speeches total. It's just that it plays randomly when you're doing the test chambers, and somebody, I'll post the video in the notes, somebody actually took all the new Cave Johnson lines and stitched them together in a YouTube video. And it came to about 20 minutes, I think is what it was.
Jeez.
Cave Johnson's freaking hilarious.
Would you agree with us, Calcifer? He might agree.
That was a morale.
Is he stealth? It decides that our recording equipment is good. No kidding.
Anywho, so I'm happy they're doing more user-generated content, and I think it'll be nice to see more stuff happen in that way. Especially in, you know, I mean, they're even doing user-generated content in Team Fortress 2 now that it's a free game. They charge for user-generated tools in order to make some content. I think they do stuff like hats. I haven't played enough Team Fortress to know what the big deal is with all the hats. Apparently people like hats.
They give bonuses, I think, of various sorts. Also, they're fashionable.
They're the weird collector.
In the words of the Jaegerkin in
Girl Genius,
that's some hot.
Those guys are entertaining.
They do like hats.
They do like hats.
Hats are a sign of leadership among Jaegerkin.
That's a schmaltz guy. I did like that episode where the Gil's walking through the blimp wearing his hat. Everybody just lets him go based on the hat except for one guy, which he punches like, let me through and you're getting promotion later. Because he's the only person that didn't let him through solely based on a giant flaming hat.
That hat. I can get caught up again.
Anywho, and then let's see. Let's go ahead and move on to our other user-asked question. I guess this is kind of our own user-generated content, answering user-asked questions.
We are the game robots. Input question now.
Episodic gaming. Basically, what are our thoughts? As far as I understood the question, she was asking about episodic gaming as an experience. She just played the first episode of the Left 4 Dead game, found it really entertaining. For those of you who are unaware of what episodic gaming is, it's when a developer releases smaller games cheaper and more regularly than they could release the full game completed. Typically, this can earn them a little more money since they're charging like $15 per episode, and they can just keep releasing episodes until they feel their story has been completed. And the games are usually aren't near as long as a full game, so you probably will get like maybe 2 or 3 hours out of an episodic game. And you'll usually expect another one to come down the pipe in about 6 or 7 months instead of 3 or 4 years. Episodic gaming, I think, if done right, is a great idea. I like the idea of being able to buy my games in smaller chunks more regularly. On the downside is, the only one I really know to have done this right so far is, I think, Tall Tale. They did the Back to the Future episodic games. The first company I remember coining the term was Valve. And I don't think they know what it means.
No. Where is Half-Life Episode 3?
Because as it was Half-Life, it's like they came out with Half-Life 2 Episode 1. They're like, yeah, we're going to do a smaller game and we're going to bring them out more quickly. Like, you know, every 6 months. 2 or 3 years later, they came out with Episode 2. And we're still waiting on Episode 3. In fact, it's more looks like that's just going to be Half-Life 3 now. So, and then another game which it got to episode 2, but then they stopped making it was the Panini Arcade game series.
I wondered about that. I was like, I have not heard anything about this for a very long time.
Yeah, they did episode 1 and 2, and then they just released the script, and they didn't finish it off.
That's weird.
It was a fun, I thought it was a fun game, too. I mean, the script had, it had Panini Arcade, it had Tycho's writing. What can you say beyond that? And it had Gabe's art. I mean, it was Panini Arcade in video game form.
It was. I guess it just depends. Like, games anymore are such multi-million dollar things that people need to make back lots of money to cover the cost of making the game. And it's just like, and people just seem...
I think there's something to scale in games. It's like when you
yeah.
go through all the effort building the models and the engine and everything else that you might as well make a, you know, 50-hour game.
Versus doing just a 5-hour game.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the, yeah, this the you know, that yeah. back-end sort of development
even,
is a significant investment.
Even with episodic game, I haven't done a lot of it, but I'm like, if a game was only 2 to 3 hours, I pay $15 for it, and then I have to wait another 6 months for the next one. That's like one sitting if you're a series, you know, just have like a Friday night that you can play, you can probably finish the whole game, and you're like, well, now I gotta wait 6 more months for the next thing to come out.
But then you have this big resurgence of, I mean, this is of the like indie games, which are the same thing, but you're finding all these gems in those because they're not having to spend this millions of dollars.
I think most of those they kind of win because they take a simple idea and just execute it really, really, really well.
Well, then we have, who was it that's doing, they're not even indie, I guess you can't call them indie games because it's a big studio. Tim Schafer's company that did Brutal Legend. Now I have to look this up because this is going to bug me if I don't remember what his game's name his studio is because I should remember it.
I'm just going to start calling them craft games. Like craft brews.
Double Fine. Okay. Tim Schafer of Double Fine, after he made, you know, games from our you know, childhoods, he did Day of the Tentacle, The Secret of Monkey Island, and Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge. Then he also did Psychonauts, which, if the rumor is still true, that might, Psychonauts 2 may actually be made, and that could be a good thing, because Psychonauts was a real fun game. And then Brutal Legend didn't do so good.
I think it's because it's not what you were expecting.
I was not expecting a real-time strategy game.
Well, all the previews I saw, I was like, yeah, you just go around as a rocker, banging stuff with your guitar.
That's what I expected. So
even Jack Black couldn't save that game.
So then after that, he made the smaller games. He did Costume Quest for Halloween when Halloween came out. And then he also made a game based off of, get this, Russian stacking dolls. You were the tiny doll, and the rest of your family had gotten taken away, so you used your ability to jump into other dolls to take their abilities in order to try and save your family.
I like the concept, and I think I've heard of that game. I just haven't played it
yet. Yeah, it's called Stacking. So,
the costume changer one, it just seems... The 8-year-old girl in me thinks that's kind of cool, because that's one of the reasons why I like playing Final Fantasy X2. She just sees those magical girl dress up.
And then he also made, I guess this was actually an interesting story he told, he would always have to leave his daughter to go to work. Well, on this particular game, and I'll get to what it was in a minute for those that don't know, his daughter was like, "Do you have to go to work?" "Yeah, I have to go make games." "Are you making a game that I can play?" "Yeah, we're making a Sesame Street game." "Okay, go to work, Daddy." Basically, they made Sesame Street Once Upon a Monster for the Kinect. And now they are working on a new point-and-click adventure game that was funded entirely from
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, that's right. And they made so much money, it's going to be available on every device that, you know, has an operating system. Linux, PC, Mac, OS X, iPhone, Android.
Your TI-84.
Quite possibly. Because I think they needed, like...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You have to have a TI-89 Plus.
They needed like $400,000 or $500,000 for it. And within 24 hours, they made a million.
Some people just like, they start a Kickstarter, it just gets ridiculous. Like, it's unbelievable how much money they get, you know, pulled in.
Oh, well, this is convenient. On the page I'm on, it has, when the project ended funding on March 13th, they had funded $336,371. And yeah, they needed $400,000. They just wanted $400,000 to make the game.
Well, they almost got 10 times what they asked for.
And basically, they were saying, so what are we going to do if we get more money? It's going to go into better voice acting, more supported systems. They're basically going to make a better game with the better money.
I just find that cool, that sort of thing. No, it's not that way off subject, because it's talking about episodic gaming, and this is, again, talking about community. This is another, it is sort of user-generated content again. These are people who are like, yes, I want to see this project, and sometimes studios are like, oh, we don't want to take this risk because it's going to be too costly. We don't know if it's going to pan out for us. This is basically the consumer saying, I'm going to buy your game even, and I'm going to, you know, I want it so much that I'm actually going to support you developing the game before I even get a chance to buy it.
Yeah, like, here's $10 now, or whatever that people are donating.
I mean, and you can vary your level of donation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and this kind of shows, too, that if everybody just donates $10, you can get, you know, $3 million a month. Depending on how many people donate, which is kind of cool too, because it's people saying, these people are like, we do want this. We think this is cool. We want something new. We're willing to, you know, back you with our own money.
Or in this case, something old brought back.
Yeah. It'd be nice if basically, like, the $60, you know, level donation on one of these video game projects was basically a copy of the game.
That's what you got at the $30 donation.
You got a 30. Okay.
I think it was 30.
And I'd have to pay the full retail.
It wasn't a very high level in order to actually get a copy of the game once it was completed. And the higher levels, because they had several levels, one level you'd get, you know, early access to the game, then you'd get HD recorded content of the process of the game being made. I think it was the $300,000 process that took you out to dinner and bowling.
$300,000?
Yeah.
Did someone donate that?
I don't know, but basically you went out to dinner and bowling with the entire...
It can't be $300,000. You're talking about somebody funded like the entire project practically by themselves.
Maybe it was $100,000. It was some ridiculous number. I kid you not.
It was the venture capitalist number.
It was a number that... Yeah.
It was a number that they didn't think they'd actually reach, but, you know, they thought they'd put it on there just for chits and giggles. Because you never know, if you don't put it on there, if you don't put it on there, it will never happen. If you put it on there, at least there's that 0.0001% somebody will say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Well, it's like when Rich Brewer of, you know, Order of the Sick did his Kickstarter, like
like all of his, like, high-end stuff was, like, gone.
Well, the highest one was, like, $5,000 or something.
It was basically have a character drawn by Rich appear in a comic.
A character of your own... Either your own D&D character or
kind
some
like
other
you OC. Yourself or
yeah, some OC character was drawn it, and plus you got all the other stuff too. somebody bought it. And I'm like, man, I don't have $5,000 just sitting around to, you know, donate to somebody. I could, you know, do like the $10 to $20 range. Say, good job, keep working. But $5,000? That would pay at least half of my school loan off, so.
Yeah, another good thing about episodic gaming that I could see, we were talking about cost of an overall game. They don't necessarily have to do all the models for the game ahead of time. Like, you don't have to do the models for the big baddies that you run into at the end of the game or the stronger enemies you would have later on. You could start out basically levels 1 through 5, only design those, and then see what the thing is like, see if you actually want to take the funds to continue finishing the rest of the game.
Yeah, I guess, too, it kind of gives people a little bit of sort of test waters to say, is this concept good? And to see if, like, oh, people are really responding to it, we can do another one, another one. Otherwise, you're just kind of like, release it and nothing happens. And oh man, at least we didn't, you know, waste $50 million. We only raised $20 million because it wasn't quite as good as. Or maybe it gives people a second chance to try again. I guess it just depends on how volatile the business is and how quickly people go under.
It also allows gamers to give a better input. It's like, well, this was really good, but if you tweaked it just a little bit this way, I think it would work better. They can make those tweaks in, you know, earlier in the game instead of having to wait for an entire sequel. Which I guess technically episode 2 would be a sequel, but that's entirely beyond the point.
We're talking about smaller bits instead of...
Yeah. Again, we're talking about a few months instead of a few years.
Yeah. Well, that's the difference between, you know, like, episodes in a, you know, TV series are not sequels to each other.
True.
They're episodes. It's a different thing. It's, you know, like, the traditional game is like the movie to these being more like the miniseries.
That's a good way to put it. And that's about really all I have for today. How about you guys?
Well, I want to go back to my thing that I was, like, waiting for.
Your
I was
thinking Etsy about, thing, right?
Well, it's not Etsy. It's, well, on my Zelda Dungeon site, apparently there are board game forums. There are forums for everything. And this guy, this particular one, made a Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past board game. He kind of based it off of another game called Keys to the Kingdom or something, which I unfortunately never played.
I think I recall it, but not sure if I ever actually played it.
But basically, he took a lot of the sprite art. He had kind of rearranged the map slightly, so it's not exactly like what it is in the game. Which some people are like, it doesn't look exactly like in the game. You just ruined my childhood. I'm like, come on, guys. Buck up a little here. It's not the end of the world, but it's really cool because it's a working game. It's very highly detailed. He spent over $400 just getting the printing done for this game because it's on, I'm not kidding, the boards themselves are at least 3 feet tall and then wide. And basically you have the light world, and it opens up for 4 panels, and that's the dark world. And you can fold over the panels again to move between light and dark worlds and such. But basically the premise is that in every castle, there's a treasure you want to get. And the treasure to end the game is the Triforce. Basically, you have to get the Triforce and take it back to Link's house to finish the game. You have to, you know, roll to move across the board with an 8-sided dice. There's different obstacles, which have obstacle cards. You have treasures and items that you can use. So if you land out of space that has an enemy, you can use your sword to, you know, defeat the enemy and such. And you want to collect the different treasures. And you have to fight, like, a boss, and like a mini-boss and the main boss of whatever particular temple or dungeon you're going into. And it was really cool. I think if you sign, I'd have to find it again. If you sign up, I think, on the board game forums, he can send you, like, there is a place where you can get a sort of invite to download the PDFs and print them yourself if you want to try the game. Because you can't technically sell them because everyone's like, copyright, dude, really bad copyright. Because you literally just took, you know, people who've done high, you know, res imaging of the pixel art and such and found it online and did it in Photoshop. But you did use Etsy to, you know, find somebody who cracked the little Link figures are like this, they're a good 3-4 inches tall of the pieces that move across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was really cool because just the level of detail and sort of the use of it, and also that there's board game forums. I should just send you the link to Zelda Dungeon because then you can he has a little preview video of how the game works and such.
Cool.
And sort of test play. But it was, I was just amazed by the level of detail and stuff. And I'm just like, if you know, I would buy something like that over, you know, the Nintendo edition of Monopoly. It's just like, at least they tried to use something with the intellectual property instead of just saying, we're just going to slap the character images on stuff. And this is like, we're going to try to make a game that's working in this world and makes sense for the world. The thing I had always laughed though is if you get Zelda is the treasure you don't want. Because if you get Zelda, you have to take her back to the sanctuary before you can go on and get more treasure.
That could be annoying.
Yeah. So you have to go all the way back. And I was like, poor Zelda. She is like the, you know, the unwanted treasure. Even though she's the thing you try, you know, person you try to save in all the games.
But you can't save her until you have a full try for her, so why bother?
Yeah, I guess that was my geeky find for the week.
Cool.
All my other geekiness is going away. Look, a manga on eBay. It might be sold by me. Buy it, please.
Yeah, you could, you know, post links to it on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I guess I could do that. Might generate some more hits.
All right. You got anything you want to add, Brodius?
Nope.
Okay. I guess this will be it for this week. Next week we will probably be talking about Diablo 3.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I will be. I'm getting my copy Tuesday after I get off work.
I suppose I should just order it for download from Blizzard.
See, this is the problem. There's two of us. So you gotta buy two copies.
But we only have one computer that works.
I'm sorry.
Because I don't want to start a character on his.
And then have to start a new character?
Yes.
Yeah. I understand I can understand how that'd be a bit of a pain. But anywho, so we'll go ahead and end it here then. Go ahead and visit us at thegameslave.com where you can see our posts, articles, Twitter feed, and the store. If you have any questions, comments, rantings, you can find us at mail@thegameslave.com, or you can comment on any of the posts. In the meantime, have a great week, and game on.
Game on.
Game on.